ചേതോദർപ്പണമർജനം വോമഹാദാവാഗ്നിനിർവാപണം ശ്രേയകൈകവചന്ദ്രിയാ വിതരണം വിദ്യാവധൂ ജീവനം ആനന്ദാംബുധിവർദ്ധനം പ്രതിപദ പൂർണാമൃതാസ്വാദനം സർവാത്മാസുഭനം വരം വിജയലേ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ സങ്കീർത്തനം നാമകാരി ബഹുദാ നിജ സർവശക്തി തഥാർപ്പിതാ നിമിതാ സ്മരണേന കാല ഏകാദൃശീ തവ കൃപാ ഭഗവൻ നമാമി ദുർഗൈ ദൃശവിഭാജനിതാനുരാഗ പ്രണാരവിഷുനീചേന തരോരവി സഹിഷ്ണുനാ അമാനിനാമാനദേന കീർത്തനീയ സദാ ഹരി ന ധനം ന ജനം ന സുന്ദരീം കവിതാം വാ ജഗദീശ കാമയേ മമ ജന്മനി ജന്മനീശ്വരീ ഭവതാ ഉത്തിരഹൈതുഹിത്വയീം നന്ദതനൂജകിങ്കരം പതിതാമാം ഷമേ ഭവാം മുദോ കൃപയാ തവ പാദപങ്കജസ്ഥിതധൂളീ സദൃശം വിചിന്തയ നയനം ഗളദശോധാരയാ വദനം ഗദ്ഗദരുദ്ധയാ ഗിരാ പുളകർനിജിതം ഗദാവഭൂ തവം നാമഗ്രഹണേ ഭവിഷ്യതി യുഗായിദം നിമേഷേണ ചക്ഷുഷാ പ്രാവിശായിദം ശൂന്യായിദം ജഗത്സർവം ഗോവിന്ദ വിരഹേണ മേ ആശ്ലേഷ്യവാ പാദരതാം പിനഷ്ടുമാം അദർശനാമർമഹദാം കരോതു വാ യഥാ തഥാ വാ വിദധാതുലം മടോ മൽപ്രാണനാഥാ സ്തുന ഏവ നാപരാം. In the Ekadasha Skandam, in the 11th canto, there were two important samvadam, is it not? That's all. Ekadasha means mainly these two. One between Nimi and the Navayogis. Remember that? Nimi Navayogi Samvadam. It was called Nimi Navayoga Navayogi Samvadam. Nimi Navayogi Samvadam, the first four chapters. Then Nimi Navayogi, Nimi and Navayogi, those were the nine yogis who Rishabhadev's children. Kavi Hari Andariksha Prabuddha Pipalayanan Avirhotra Dhrumila Chamasakkara Bhajana. The nine yogis, they came to King Nimi, and the conversation between them. Samvadam it is called, between King Nimi and Navayogis. Nimi Navayogi Samvadam it is called. Then we have got one more, Shri Krishna Uddhava Sambhadha, between Krishna and Uddhava, that Sambhadha, that runs into 20, from 7th chapter onwards, right up to 29th, 23 chapters. So these are the two major discussions in the 11th canto. Nimi Navayogi Sambhadha, Shri Krishna Uddhava Sambhadha, between Krishna and Uddhava, and Nimi and Navayogis. If you look carefully, you will see, what has been discussed in the Nimi Navayogi Samvadam is the same thing that is discussed in the Shri Krishna Uddhava Samvadam. Krishna Uddhava Samvadam is also the same thing. But the difference is like this, that in Nimi Navayogi Samvadam, Nimi Maharaj asked nine questions. In answer, what is Bhagavata Dharmam? What is the symptoms of a devotee? What is Maya? how to cross over Maya. What is Brahman? What is karma? What is pastimes? And what is the fate of non-devotees? These were the questions that was asked. Bhagavadharmam, Bhakta Lakshanam, Maya, how to cross over Maya, Brahmam, Karmam, Avadara Leela, and what will happen to non-devotees. These are the number 9 questions what were asked by the king, and the 9 yogis answered that, isn't it? Beginning with Hari. If you study that well, very well, each and every question and the answer, you will get a fairly good understanding of what is in the Ekadasha Skandam. But between Krishna and Uddhava, when spoke, Uddhava asked a question little bit in a different way. Uddhava had nearly 19 questions altogether. And in answer to that, Krishna has spoken in length about the knowledge behind it, Jnana Yogam. Krishna has spoken, also spoke about bhakti. But Krishna has stressed a lot about bhakti there, because everything he spoke about jnanam, he brought it and tied it down to bhakti at the end. Importance of bhakti. So with these two discussions or samvadam, Ekadasham is over. Mukti Skandam is over. Then in the 12th canto, what we have to now start with, that mukti, what is Dvadasham? Dvadasham is the canto, Dvadasha Skandam. 12th canto is called Ashrayam. Ashrayam. Ashrayam means taking shelter. Whose shelter should we take? That's the question. How should we take shelter and whose shelter we should take? Taking shelter is the subject in this 12th canto. If you look into the 2nd canto, you will see there, Atrasargo visargascha sthanam poshanam utaya manyundaram ishanu katha nirodho muktir ashraya. Beginning from 3rd canto onwards, how different topics are discussed in different cantos. Sargam discussed in the 3rd canto, Visargam in the 4th canto, Sthanam 5th canto, Poshanam 6th canto, Uti 7th canto, and Manundaram 8th canto, Ishanukatha 9th canto, Nirodham 10th canto, Mukti is 11th canto, Ashrayam is the 12th canto. If you look into the 2nd canto, I think it's in the 9th or 10th chapter. The first few verses. So, Puranams are created in this way, that all the major Mahapuranams, they will talk about all these 10 things. They are Purana Lakshana, symptoms of a Purana. So, Sargam Visargasthana Poshana Moodi Manyandara Ishanukatha Nirodho Mukti Ashrayam. Ashrayam is the last thing in that. All other 9 cantos are to educate us to take shelter of the truth, to take shelter of Krishna. To train us for that is the 9 cantos before that. These other 9, these 10 symptoms of Puranam, the 9 symptoms including Mukti, because the question comes, after liberation is there anything else? Bhagavatam says yes. That is Ashraya. That Ashraya, Ashraya Sthiti, Ashraya state. So, there if we look, you will find what does it all mean. Sargam means what? Visargam means what? That is what is discussed in these cantos. Primary creation, secondary creation, sthanam. That means, if you beginning like this, that how creation began, and then Brahma's creation first, 3rd canto. And then creation by those created by Brahma, that is the 4th canto. And if you look, you will find there the differences between 3rd and canto. That's why it's called Sargam and Visargam. Then those who have come to this creation and those who have not accepted the authority, for them they have a separate place for them. That is called the sthanam, where they should be retained. That is why all that hellish planets and lower planets, everything discussed in the 5th canto. Those who do not want to follow the rules, those who do not want to accept the authority of the Vedam, Shastram, and continue their life based on the injunctions of the Supreme Lord. There need a place for them in this creation, and that is what is spoken in the fifth canto. And the next one is called Poshanam. Poshanam is the sixth canto. Sixth canto is called Poshanam. Poshanam means that somebody has fallen down in life, lost in this life. It happens to people, isn't it? Many times. For us also it's happened, but sometimes it happens in a big way. That you have completely lost your life in this world. In other words, got addicted to sinful living or got addicted to various things in such a way that without knowing the purpose of life and engaged in all kinds of sinful activities and all kinds of vikarmam we did here. And at the end, you don't know what to do. You have done so much vikarmam here that at the end you are looking at yourself and you are asking this question, why did I do all this? If a situation happens in that way, like in the case of Ajamila, that's the sixth canto. Even if one has fallen to the lowest level in their life and addicted to sinful activities or various ways of making living in this world, if anything happens, is there a hope for him? Bhagavatam says yes. Nobody is rejected. Even in such a state, if you can take Krishna's shelter and the holy name, there is hope. There is hope. That is why that sixth canto Ajamila story is spoken in the beginning itself, to tell us that it is not hopeless situation here. Situation is not hopeless. No matter, because many people, they are completely baffled by the material energy. Sometimes in this material world also, under the influence of the material energy, we may get affected by it so strongly, by the material energy, and we may do things which are totally against the principles of religion. If a situation happens like that, because what will happen nobody knows here, isn't it? How life will turn out for anyone in here who has got the understanding. We are always saying that, oh, I'm planning this, I plan that. Nobody is planning anything. It all happens. That's the right way to say. Things just happen in life. And when it happens, we are thinking, oh, I planned it, that's why it happened like that. Nothing in this life, anybody who had lived in this world for some time knows this very well, that nothing happens here by our planning. It just happens. According to Prarabdham, Krishna's Prakriti will control us to such an extent. We'll make decisions, we will do things, our karma will be such, all other things based on our Prarabdham and the vasanas inside will act in this world. And the results also will come according to that, whatever it may be. Because you can see two people doing the same work in this world with the same attention and care get two different results. Why is it that? Why does it happen like that? That is an obvious factor that it is not completely based on the work what you do. Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? That na kartrutvam na cha karmani logasya srijate prabhu na karma bhalasam yogam svabhavastu pravartate. Very clearly Krishna mentions there, svabhavastu pravartate, you are working according to the svabhavam, but that has no relationship with your results, what you are doing here. Na karma bhala samyogam. Karma and bhalam has no samyogam. Once you know this, then what you will be able to understand the way material energy works. Otherwise, in ignorance we think everything is based on what we do. The results must come accordingly, and that's what we are fighting for. So, sixth canto is only to tell us that karmam, whatever it has happened in life, it's not a hopeless situation. And to prove to us, they have brought us this story of Ajamila to tell us that. That is why the whole canto, if you look at the sixth canto, you will see this Poshanam aspect. Poshanam means that no matter what happens, if you take Krishna shelter, there is hope. That is what Poshanam. Poshanam means that no matter what happens in life, If you have taken Krishna shelter and surrendered to Krishna and saying to Krishna, from now on, I am yours. You can do what you want with me, but I will stay with you. I am not going to leave you under any circumstances. If you take that approach, Sixth Canto is teaching us that you will be protected. Eventually, you will come out of this situation. Prarabdham won't go that because of that. Prarabdham will still come and bring the problems. But you won't lose yourself in that process. You can somehow get through this life and even in the future. That is why if you look at the stories in the Sixth Canto, all the stories are giving the same Poshanam Leela. Poshana Leela it is called. Poshanam. Similarly, Chitraketu's story, if you look, you will see there, Chitraketu was a great personality, great king. And so many things about Chitraketu spoken, but then he was mad about having a son. And then what happened? All things after followed them from that. Eventually, Chitraketu felt, I don't want a son, I don't want anything, I just want to go from here, he said. And he packed up and went away. And then he took Krishna's shelter. Balram gave him the knowledge. And then he went back to the spiritual world. And that Chitraketu, with all his previous vasanas, he went and offended Sri Parvati. And even though Sri Parvati cursed him to become a demon, Krishna protected him at the end, in Vritrasura's body. Is it not? So what does that indicate? What is indicating is, if you have taken Krishna's shelter wholeheartedly, without unconditionally you have to do that. Unconditionally, if you have taken Krishna's shelter, no matter whatever situation we have thrown at, there is protection guaranteed from Krishna's side. Krishna will make sure that you are finally come out of everything, all the problems, and you will be taken care of. That means you won't get further degraded and go down the path. That protection aspect of Krishna is called Poshanam. So Sixth Canto is to teach us what is called Poshanam. Krishna's powerful protection coming to the devotee who has taken Krishna's shelter. Then after that, in the seventh canto, is called Uti. Udaya Karma Vasana. How Vasana decides our future. How? The Vasana is what we create. Karma Vasana, what you create, will define our future life forever. Forever. Karma Mandala means Karma Vasana, is it not? And in this Karma Vasana means that continuously we are engaging in karma according to our desires. Avidya Kama Karma Bi. Because of Ajnanam Avidya inside, desires develop. Otherwise, why desires develop? Desires should not develop normally. But because of Avidya inside, desires develop. When desires develop, karma comes from there. To fulfill the desires, you will engage in karma. So avidya, desires, and then karma. Ignorance, desires, and an action follows by the action. From karma, what will happen? Karma vasana will come. Any karma will leave you, only it will put some impression inside and then it will go. You think about yourself who have worked in this world for a few years. I'm sure it will, sometime in your dreams it will come. Wherever you have worked, the people you have worked with, the experiences you had in your workplace, if it is not coming back to you in your dreams, I must say you are a liberated soul. That's all I can say. It gets me sometimes, and I do know things what I have worked 40 years ago when I worked, that has not gone. It's still there. And it comes out in the dream, and I know it is there inside. It comes back. Somebody whom you had problems at work or with whom you had got on very well, whatever it is, good and bad, both vasanas have been deposited inside, and you can't deny that. And the same thing with the family life also. Parents, grandparents with whom you had some relationship, they don't go away from you easily. Is it not? They are also present inside. They are all present inside. The people whom you have worked with, the office place, they have all left something inside and they have gone. They left something inside and gone. So that vasana is an indication that any karma you did or any dealings you will do in this world, they all leave some impression inside and they go. And that is called karmavasana. Karmavasana is like that. So, if it is like that, even if it is pious activity or sinful act, because we don't do much of a pious activities, most of it is the other side. That is why in the dreams what it comes is all like that. Otherwise, there's not much of a pious activity coming. Pious impressions are not there because there's not much done. So therefore it's not there. So this karma vasana is a very powerful force, and they are normally categorized into two, shubha vasana and ashubha vasana. Pious vasanas and impious vasanas. So, seventh canto, which is nothing but story of Prahlada, is it not? Prahlada, his vasanas were very good. Vasanas were very good. And because of the good vasanas inside, irrespective of the fact that he was born in a demoniac family as Hiranyakashipu's son, and all his associates and friends were all from the demoniac background, in spite of all that, the vasanas, the strength of the vasanas protected him. The strength of Prahlada's vasanas protected him. Look at the strength. When Hiranyakashipu was saying to him about Vishnu in a most derogatory way, Prahlada's faith and the vasanas protected him. That vasana inside. That is why the whole seventh canto is nothing but to teach us the science of karma vasana. Karma vasana. Utaya karma vasana, says in the Bhagavatam. Uti. Uti means karma vasana. So, karma vasana is a force that will not leave us easily. And that is inside us, in our subtle body and in the form of avidya in the causal body as well. Now, what we have done in this life alone is coming back to you in your dreams. Imagine all what we have done in previous lifetimes. If they all start coming back in the dreams, how will that be? But as far as Shastram is concerned, anything what you are experiencing in the dream is something you had gone through in this lifetime or in some previous lifetime. That is why this experience of sometimes you feel attacked by the tiger, attacked by the elephant, that means in different bodies you must have experienced something to create that fear inside about that. And that comes back in this life, in the dreams. That's all it is. Krishna says about this in the... Rishi says, this dream body has been created, or the dream state has been created only for this purpose. To give you an indication that it is not so simple as you think about us, ourselves. That there is a continuity there in our life, which is going back to several lifetimes before, and that comes back and stays with you, and in the form of karmam, it will build up later, and eventually that has to go, leave us. These vasanas have to leave us, everything. All vasanas has to go. So, anyway, coming back to the seventh canto is the history of karmam. How karmam affects a person, karma vasana. Then after that, in the eighth canto, what do you see? That, if it was like this, as we saw in the third, fourth, fifth and sixth, seventh cantos, that were there any people in this world who ruled this planet in the way to help people to develop spiritually? It is their story that what you read in the eighth canto, Manvantara. Manvantaraadhipati, they are called Manvantari, the people who are responsible for different Manus, Swayambhuva Manu, start Tamasam, Uttamam, Raivatam, Chakshusha Manvantaram. And in these different Manus times, how Krishna has removed people and got them out of the trouble from here. Story of Gajendra and many others. Whole of 8th canto begins with Upanishad's knowledge, isn't it? Almavai, Sridevisham, that verses in the Ishopanishad you will find there in that. So, 8th canto takes us back to that. That there were personalities who lived in this world, who ruled this planet with this understanding, and not allowing people to engage in vikarmam and protecting them from that. Manus have done that for a long time. So their administration and their examples themselves all the menus, how they conducted the administration, that is what we read in the 8th canto. And then, under these menus, those who ruled this earth, the two dynasties, Solar dynasty and the Lunar dynasty, in these dynasties also appeared many great personalities. Many great personalities. Only those who have followed the spiritual instruction seriously and took advantage of the human body, like the one I was referring to before, that there were the haves and the have-nots, but there's another group who had everything, but they threw away everything and walked away from here. It is their story that is in the 9th canto, Ishanu Katha. Ishanu Katha means story of those great souls who left this world, walked away from here, in spite of the fact that they had so much opulence in this world. If you look at Solar dynasty, you will see one after the other, isn't it? Great personalities there. Same thing in the Lunar dynasty also. So, Manvantarayanam Ishanu Katha. Then finally, after going through these 9 cantos, we come to what is known as Nirodham. Nirodham is the 10th canto. Nirodho Muktirashraya. Nirodham is the 10th canto. Nirodham means that bondage is due to the mind, is due to this thing called mind. And mind has to become free. This existence of the mind itself is the cause of bondage. So, this mind is not easy to break away from the attachment. And it is very difficult for the mind to free itself on its own from this world. Even if the mind tries very hard, it's very difficult to break away from the world, break away from this body, break away from all our other attachments here. So, 10th canto has been spoken that Nirodham is possible by hearing about someone who is beyond the 3 modes of nature. Mind means what? 3 modes of material nature. Satugunam, Rajogunam, Tamogunam. That is what the mind means, isn't it? Another form of saying about the mind is Trigunam. Trigunam. Normal way of saying mind is that Chitavrti. Chitavrti is the mind. If you ask the mind, where is the mind? Nobody can show where it is. But Shastram says to us, thought waves, which are called Chitavrti, as long as we have Chitavrti inside, or thought waves inside, that means the mind is operating. And that Chittavrati comes under these 3 categories. Which one? Sattugunam, Rajogunam, Tamogunam. These 3 modes of nature is present in the thought waves and that keeps the mind going, running. So if we have to come out of the mind, free ourselves from these 3 modes of material nature, there is only one way. We have to be in contact with somebody who is outside the 3 modes of material nature. And that is Krishna. That is Krishna. And that is why whole 10th canto, Krishna and Krishna's activities, showing to us that those who are under the 3 modes of material nature, how they came out of it. They themselves got free from that. Gopis, all 10th canto, if you analyze it properly, whole of first part of 10th canto is those devotees who are affected by Tamoguna. Who are affected by Tamogunam. Now when I say this, you have to remember, we are not saying gopis are in Tamogunam. Don't misunderstand it that way. Gopis are great souls. But they had to play that role here. They had to play that role of gopis here. Which means what? When you come to this world, they are ordinary women who had no spiritual education. They had no austerities and penances. They had nothing to show. But they were selected for that role because their background is so high. They had special privilege to play with Krishna, to live with Krishna, to spend time with Krishna. It was offered to them, but they had to play the role of gopis here. And while playing the role of gopis here, they are considered to be in Tamogunam. To show to us that even if we fall into Tamogunam, there is hope. That is what it is indicating. Gopis, you will see what Krishna says about gopis. What does he say? He says, these gopis, Krishna says, they have not performed any austerity. They have not performed any serious austerity. They just lived in this world like ordinary people. And they conducted the business, they were busy selling their milk and milk products. Ordinary people, like, they lived their life here. Particularly, they have not performed any big sacrifices or anything. They never studied any shastram. They didn't even, you couldn't say that they were properly initiated and chanted the holy name 16 rounds or anything like that. You don't see anything with the gopis. Gopis record, if you look at it, what do they have? All it was is they got attracted to Krishna, and Krishna's association eventually got them out of the trouble, and they became the best among all the devotees. Is it not? So, to indicate to us that because of coming into contact with Krishna, that was their success, that good fortune they had. Krishna is outside the three modes of material nature. So, being in contact with Krishna, they got themselves freed from their tamogunam qualities, everything, and they became the greatest of all the devotees, which means they had the highest knowledge as well at that stage. And that is what that pastimes are showing to us. So the whole first part of the 10th canto is of all about those people who were in the tamogunam. And towards the end you will see rajogunam coming in. Kamsa, Jarasandha, Shishuvala, Dandavatra. These are all devotees in the rajogunam. They are all devotees. Kamsa is a devotee. He has gone back. We are still here. So at least you have to recognize that. No matter, you can say anything you like about Kamsa. As far as Krishna is concerned, whether it is Kamsa or Shishuvala or Uddhava or Gopis, it makes no difference. Even though from a bhakti level when you speak, but from the tattvam side when you look at it is different. From the bhakti level we will say, yes, Kamsa was a demon, or Shishuvala was a demon, Dandavatra was a demon and all that. But the way Kamsa meditated on Krishna, nobody else could do that. Isn't it? Years and years waiting for Krishna to come. Asinam samvishasthishtan padyan munjanam varyadan mahim chindayano hrishikesha. Thinking about Krishna, he couldn't sleep. Whereas we get good sleep. We never get disturbed. Because of Krishna, we don't get disturbed. We get disturbed by other reasons, isn't it? Whereas Kamsa couldn't sleep because he was getting disturbed thinking about Krishna. So imagine how Krishna conscious he was. So personalities like Kamsa, then Shishuvala, same way. Shishuvala's hate towards Krishna was such that he does not want to see him. As soon as anybody mentions about Krishna's name, Shishuvala used to get upset. In the Rajasuyam sacrifice, we heard that. That Sahadeva went and invited him, Shishuvala, to come for Rajasuyam. And Shishuvala said to Sahadeva, that, is Krishna coming? He said. Then I'm not coming, he said. That was the straight answer. If he is coming, I'm not coming, he said. So Sahadev said to him, I'll make such arrangements that you don't have to see him. So specially a house is built for Sahadev to live. Shishuvala to live. Shishuvala had no problem for coming to Rajasuyam. After all, Kundidevi's children, Kundidevi's sister's son, he is. They are cousins, aren't they? Pandava's cousins, he is. Cousin, Shishuvala and Dandavatra. So, Shishuvala came for Rajasuyam. And he made sure that Sahadeva said, I've made all arrangements that you don't have to see Krishna face to face. Only if you see him, you get upset. Because Shishuvala says, after all, who is he? This was Shishuvala's mode. Shishuvala's hate inside was such that he's only a cowherd boy. He's not even a Kshatriya. He said, he used to, whole childhood was all stealing and playing around with the gopis, his credibility is not so good. Shishuvala always looked down upon Krishna in that way, always abusing him in one way or the other. So Shishuvala eventually wanted to avoid Krishna all the time and wanted to stay in his house, which was specially built. Sahadev told him that everything will be brought here, you don't have to come out even from the house. For the sacrifice you can come and go, but be present, that's what all we need. And agreement between Sahadeva and Shishuvala. But then what happened? When, as soon as Shishuvala arrived and he got inside, that this was Sahadeva did not know about this. Krishna goes there, knocks at the door.
And Sahadeva opens, Shishwala opens the door and sees Krishna standing there. So he gets upset. Shishwala immediately closes the door. Krishna says, I brought something for you to drink. This is Krishna. That he has acted in such a way towards Shishwala. After all, Krishna says that they were my servants there. In the spiritual world, Krishna's servants they were, was it not? Jai Vijay they were. So Krishna made sure that when they were here, in opulence they should be no way lower than me, than Krishna, because after all they are my servants there. So Shishwala and Dandavatra were very opulent people while they were in this world, and there was little bit problem there between, again Shishwala gets upset with Krishna, again Shishwala complains to Sahadeva about this. All this you will see in the Mahabharatam, Rajasuyam sacrifice, when in the Bhagavatam all this is not spoken. Rajasuyam is spoken in the Mahabharatam. Everything in the Bhagavatam, if you want to know the history behind it, you have to read Mahabharatam. Mahabharatam will tell you more in detail about everything. So Shishwala eventually lost his, started abusing Krishna, and finally in the Rajasuyam, Krishna cut his throat and sent him back to the spiritual world. So all these rajasic nature, tamasic you have seen, the gopis and those who have come to kill Krishna, those demons, they were all given liberation in the tamogunam. After that, the rajasic nature, the kings like Shishwala, Kamsa, Dandavatra and Jarasandha and many others you will see, they are all in the rajogunam category. Who are in the rajogunam category? How they were released from that, sent back to the spiritual world. And then finally, we have those who are in the Satvaguna. That is Vasudev, Devaki, Bahulashva, Shuddhadeva, Sudama and all those. They are all the ones in the Satvaguna. How they were also released from their bondage. So whole of 10th canto is nothing but the association with Krishna of devotees who are under three modes. When they came into contact with somebody's personality who is beyond the three modes of material nature, how they got liberated, that is the 10th canto. That means mano nirodham, the mind getting freed from the three modes of material nature. That's what's called mano nirodham. Mano nirodham means getting ourselves, our mind, free from the three modes of material nature. Therefore, 10th canto is called a nirodham. Mano nirodham, nirodham. And then we have seen the 11th canto, which is called Mukti Skandam, isn't it? Ekadasha Skandam is Mukti Skandam. That means those who have that mano nirodham, what will be their state? Or those who are inquiring after the truth, because only when the mind comes under control or mano nirodham happens, only then these vasanas will come, which one? To get liberated from here. That desire comes up at that time. When the mind fall comes into nirodham, you know, nirodham state, desire for liberation will be very strong in a person. If such a desire comes up in someone, what chance has he got? That is the 11th canto. One who has got that intense desire for escaping from here, which will only happen when the mind is come under nirodham, mano nirodham. Then the next thing is mukti skandam, mukti skandam. That is why it's called mukti skandam. Ekadasha skandam is called mukti skandam. So mukti skandam. And now we have seen that Ekadasha skandam, last so many years we discussed this. And as much as that is why when we say Bhagavatam should be studied from beginning to end, not only one canto you can't pick up and say that this is it. We should study all the cantos. Every canto has its own contribution to our spiritual life. For example, the first canto and second canto, if you look, what do they call it? First canto is called Adhyayi Skanda. Adhyayi Skanda means one who is qualified for Srimad Bhagavatam. To show to us, through Parikshit, a person who is like Parikshit is qualified to hear Bhagavatam. Why? Because Parikshit had that right attitude. When he heard that on the seventh day he is going to be bitten by the Takshaka, what did he do? He threw all his... He could have counteracted that if he wanted. He He could have. After all, Parikshit was protected in the womb of the mother by Krishna himself. But instead of counteracting that, because he accepted that as destiny, prarabdham, and was saying there at that time, if you look at Parikshit's words at that time, Ashatvalam Gayada Vishnu Gadha, that a golden opportunity has come to me. Who wants to stay here? Parikshit says. Just like Yudhishthira walked out, Parikshit is also saying, there is no point in staying here. I have been given 7 days' time. That is Parikshit's argument. I've been given 7 days' time. Let me go and sit at Ganga River, banks of the Ganga River, and give up this body. Thinking about Krishna, he said. And by Krishna's arrangement at that time, Sukadeva Goswami arrived there to talk to him about Krishna. Because Krishna has planned everything to suit Parikshit, so that Parikshit can go back after this time in this world. So when Parikshit arrived, accordingly everything was planned by Krishna himself. All the rishis came there, Srinarada Maharishi, Vedavyas, and the whole list if you read there, how glorifying Parikshit's departure is. To have the presence of all those personalities, Atri, Vasishtha, Bharadvaj, Gautama, Kanva, Pipalada, Parashuram, with all his disciples, Gautama Maharshi, Vedavyas, Srinarada Maharshi, endless list you find there. Two whole verses talking about 30-40 rishis who have come to see Parikshit's departure from this world. Why? Yadrachaya, Krishna's desire. Krishna prompted from within that they should all go and see Parikshit when he is leaving this body. And Parikshit himself was amazed by their presence. He hasn't informed anybody. He decided to go and sit near the Ganga River, but they all arrived one after the other with their disciples. And including and finally, more than anyone else, Shugha Brahmarshi, who doesn't go anywhere, who doesn't even have a form, a body, he comes there with a body and he comes there. All the rishis gets up from their seat and pay their obeisance, respects to Shugha Brahmarshi. Shugha Brahmarshi sat on the seat and spoke Srimad Bhagavatam to Parikshit. So if you understand the background of Srimad Bhagavatam, you can appreciate the position of Parikshit. That is why it is called Adhikari Skandam. One who is qualified to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. So Adhikari Skandam is the first canto. And second canto, what kind of person should speak Bhagavatam? That is the second canto. Second canto begins with that, is it not? You saw Shugha Brahmarshi's real color, you can watch there in that second canto. If you have second canto, have a look at it. What he says there. Some of the things, so outspoken. So outspoken, that is spiritual. No messing around with anything, with the truth. Straightforward. Variyane shadam prashna, that begins with that, isn't it? And the questions from Parikshit, and do you see that honesty in that relationship, what you find there between Parikshit and Sukadeva Goswami? Where do you find that? He says there, isn't it? The second canto is such a nature of Shugha Brahmarshi's qualities there that that he mentions there, why do I have to go and glorify these wealthy people in this world? Are there no caves anymore to go and sleep? Is there not? The verses you know. That, can I not use my hand as a pillow and sleep? Can I not get the fruits? Are they not giving fruits anymore? Is there no water flowing anymore in the river? Why do I have to go and flatter these wealthy people for maintaining this body? That vairagyam inside Sukadeva Goswami. You will see, Chirani Padina Jeevandi, there is a whole verse there. Lot of important verses there. To show who is this Sukadeva Goswami, what is his nature, that person's nature. And that is why the person who should hear Bhagavatam and who should speak Bhagavatam. That second canto is the clear expression of that personality, Shugha Brahmarshi. So, from third canto we have seen Sargam Visargam Sthanam Poshanam Udi Manandaram Ishanikada Nirodham Mukti. 11th canto. And finally, what is that? Is there anything after liberation? That question comes, isn't it? Nirodho muktira ashraya. Ashrayam is the thing. Ashrayam. What is ashrayam? That is spoken in the second canto. If you look at the second canto, if anybody has second canto, I'll have a look. I'll tell you what it mentions there. Those verses. Ashrayascha. It mentions, explains there. What ashrayam means. Ashrayam means that after leaving this liberation state, once it comes, what is our relationship with Krishna? What's our relationship with Krishna? That is spoken in the... we'll come to that when we come to the 10th canto, when we come back again to 2nd canto, we'll discuss that in detail. But for the moment, if we understand that ashram or shelter is the message of this 12th canto. In 12th canto, basically, only this is a small canto, only 13 chapters. And what it mentions is that creation has to take shelter of something, the creator, who has created. So, and in this creation, whatever living entities are there, these living entities are all connected with the shelter, with the creator. We are all connected with the creator, with Krishna, in other words. We are connected with Krishna, and you won't be able to break away from that. Because you can see, after creating all of us, Krishna has got inside all of us and sat there as Antaryami. That's more than enough as a proof. That he's sitting there as Antaryami, he is controlling us every moment in our life. So it is impossible to break away from that relationship with Krishna. All other relationships are false. They have no meaning much. That's based on the body. But connection with Krishna is on the spiritual platform. As Antaryami inside, Jiva is very close with Antaryami, isn't it? Paramatma, Jivaatma, that relationship is impossible to break. Jivaatma to Jivaatma you can break, but Jivaatma to Paramatma you can't break away from that, because that relationship is based on a spiritual platform, totally on the spiritual platform. So, in this canto, it is to prove to us again that Jivaatma has no other shelter except Krishna. Except Krishna, being the Paramatma. Being the Paramatma, he has no other shelter. So, the first 6 chapters in this is what Sukadeva Goswami or Shukam Brahmarshi talking to Parikshit. And in the 6th chapter, Parikshit is gone, Sukadeva Goswami is also gone. It's over there. Shukam Brahmarshi and Parikshit, their final pastimes. That means Shukam Brahmarshi giving Brahmopadesham to Parikshit. 7 days, Shukam Brahmarshi has been talking various things, isn't it? Now the time has come. Parikshit has to go. Tatshaka was already there. Knowing all these things, Shukam Brahmarshi sensed that time has come to go. So he brought the issue now of going away, leaving this body and realizing the truth, Aham Brahmasmi. Realization for him. And remaining chapters in this canto is conversation between Sudha Goswami and Shaunaka Rishi and other rishis who are present in the Naimisharanyam, because it's happening in Naimisharanyam. So in Naimisharanyam, this discussion between Sudha Goswami and the other rishis, that's what is the remaining seven chapters in the 13 chapters. So it is also to point out to us, an intelligent person should not delay in hearing about Krishna. Should not delay it. He should take it as soon as an opportunity comes. He should take advantage of it. Because to tell us that the time is very, very bad. The current time is very, very bad. And that is why this 12th canto begins with the 4 chapters in the beginning to tell us how bad the time is. After Krishna's departure from this world, you see, one after the other, all the good qualities left. Human society has become degraded to such levels that how the administration of the world has become gone into the wrong hands, how people have lost all kinds of good qualities in them, and they have, day by day, they get more and more degraded in their life in this world, on the moral side, dharmic side, and all, even on the spiritual side. In all aspects, how people have become fallen further and further down in this life. That is why 12th canto begins with that first. That the first four chapters is all about what is happening here now after Krishna's departure. So, and in the first chapter, he's talked about those kings who ruled this at that time. And in the Lunar Dynasty was spoken in the Lunar Dynasty we saw how Krishna appeared. All that we have seen, that is in the Lunar Dynasty, isn't it? So, and for thinking about, if you want to escape from here in this situation, again in this canto, unless you develop bhakti for Krishna, there is not much of a hope. We can talk about other things, jnanamargam, everything is nice, but ordinary people won't be able to follow that path. It is a difficult path. Bhakti is the shelter process for us. And therefore, we are going back to that dynasty again and start discussing that from there onwards. That is how this 12th canto begins. This is just a brief introduction to the 12th canto. For the 12th canto. How 12th canto is structured. First four chapters about the bad time in waiting. What is in waiting? What's happening? And which will get worse and worse further. And then in two chapters, on the fifth and the sixth, Shuga Brahmarshi sending Parikshit back to spiritual world with Brahmavadesham, it's called. Then Shuga Brahmarshi leaving from there. Then with that six chapters gone, and then the remaining chapters between Sudha Goswami and Shaunaga Rishi. Shaunaga Rishi and others asked a few questions. It was at that time one of the most important topics in the Bhagavatam Sudha Goswami had to say. That is the story of Markandeya. Famous story, that is, Markandeya story in the Bhagavatam. In three chapters it has spoken, the story of Markandeya. This Markandeya Rishi story, basically, you know, Bhagavatam is a compilation of all the Puranam, isn't it? Different Puranams has been brought in and compiled Bhagavatam. Malsya Puranam, Kurma Puranam, Vamana Puranam, Garuda Puranam, Varaha Puranam. All Puranams has been taken and brought into Bhagavatam. Third canto is Varaha Puranam. Varaha appearance, it's from Varaha Puranam, summary is in the third canto. Similarly, you will see partly from Shiva Puranam also, the Kshayagam and all those stories. So, Srimad Bhagavatam is nothing but a combination of all Puranams brought together, because Bhagavatam was compiled at the end. After all, other Puranams, individually they were written. But this particular Puranam, Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedavyasa Maharshi, who wrote all other Puranams, and also Vishnu Puranam, which was compiled by Parashara Maharshi, his father, even from there, in all the message has been brought into Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam is nothing but combination of several Puranams. Vishnu Puranam, Varaha Puranam, Narasimha Puranam, 7th canto is all Narasimha Puranam, Vamana Puranam, 8th canto, Malsi Puranam. So all 10 different incarnations of Krishna from 10 different Puranams has been brought, compiled and brought in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam to us. What's interesting there is the way things are spoken in the other Puranams and the way they are, the same thing when it is spoken to Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a difference. This is the beauty, the way Puranams discuss things. In Puranam, it is not a history. You must never take Puranam as a history. Puranam is not history. Mahabharatam is history. Mahabharatam is history. Itihasam. It is itihasam. That's history. But Puranams are not history. Puranams are not history. If you start thinking that it is Puranam and you start research on Puranam, you will get nowhere. You will get nowhere. You will go crazy. Because the whole thing is so written
that you won't find any. For example, if you take Srimad Bhagavatam, do you think everything is discussed in a chronological order? Nothing is in chronological order. Some things, what has happened in the early childhood, is discussed at a later date in the Bhagavatam. Even if you take the 10th canto, Krishna's pastimes in the Bhagavatam, they are not in a sequence, in a chronological order. None of them. There's a lot of things which have been, some of them are spoken before, some of them are spoken later. So that is the difficulty in the Puranam. Puranam has got that way of saying things. Puranam is written on other principles. Puranam has a message to give it to us. So therefore, while compiling Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranams, you won't find any chronological order. If you try to look for chronological way, you won't find any justification that. Many things we can point out to you. When we come to 10th canto, we'll see there. So many things. Some things, what is, for example, when Rukmini and Krishna quarreled, isn't it? That 60th chapter, Karkichit chapter. Generally you will think that normally when do they quarrel after marriage? Husband wife quarrels after the marriage. And after 40, 50 years you will think everything will settle down, quarrel, because both get tired after that. No energy to quarrel anymore. So everybody makes a compromise and say, that's it now. I can't fight anymore, I'm tired fighting. And it comes. If you read this, in this instance, if you read in the Bhagavatam, you would have thought that Krishna and Rukmini fought each other, isn't it? They're arguing each other. Krishna is saying that you can leave home and go. Rukmini starts crying and all that. All these things. But this has happened after grandchildren were born. Pradyumna was born, Aniruddha was born. It is after that this happening. So if you start thinking, you may think in your mind, oh, they were fighting each other like us. They were also fighting. And if you start thinking like that, didn't happen after marriage. It happened after, probably Krishna was probably by then 70 or 80 years in this world. You can't say Krishna is 70 years old, because that will be wrong, isn't it? A person who has no birth, who has no death, what age can you give it to him? But you can say like this, 70, 80 years he may have spent here. That means after Pradyumna was born, then grandson Aniruddha was born. They were all born, and it is after that this incident is happening. So to connect it with the time is difficult. With everything in the Puranam, to connect it with the time, it is very, very difficult. Very, very difficult. So therefore, that here, that in these pastimes also, in the Puranam, that is the way it is. That as you go through, you will find a lot of things which are spoken. Sometimes something is spoken. As much as it was coming in Sugar Brahmarshi's mind or Sugar Brahmarshi's thoughts, he was saying that to Parikshit. That's the way it is. Sugar Brahmarshi, because Parikshit was asking, talk to me about Krishna. Parikshit, and Sugar Brahmarshi was in Samadhi state. Therefore, this is called Samadhi Bhasha. Vallabhacharya calls Bhagavatam a Samadhi Bhasha. Samadhi language it is. In Samadhi, whatever he is seeing, he is saying that to Parikshit, including the 5th canto. In Samadhi, he is seeing all these creation. Which one? Harivarsham, Ilavrata Varsham, and Kurivarsham, and Kedumala, and Jambudvipam, all these things. Now, if you say that we have to find them out now, like the way we are after that, he may not find them. You can say anything you want, but only in Samadhi state you will see them. You can't see otherwise. In Samadhi state, he is seeing the creation. Just to make us aware, what we see with our eyes and what we hear with our ears is not the truth. At least that much understanding, if we get it, we have understood Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam's main message is that, to tell us, what you see and what you hear is not the truth. Because we got so much caught up in these eyes and ears, we think that we have to convince everybody. So whatever we do has to make sure that everybody should be able to see. But there are so many things we can't see in this creation. Creation is like that. What can we do? We don't see anything here. Hardly anything we see here with these eyes. But somehow or the other we are trapped in these eyes. Seeing, 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 everything seeing. So that is why Bhagavatam is saying to us, don't get trapped in this. So fifth canto, when it was published first time, when Prabhupada wrote fifth canto and it was published, half devotees left. They couldn't handle it. Why did they leave? Because this understanding didn't come to them. Even now, many people are thinking like this. Even devotees are thinking that what we see is the only thing we can accept. If you take that approach in spiritual life, I would say that it is a long, long haul, long way to go. Srimad Bhagavatam is not written for to suit our eyes. Srimad Bhagavatam is in the samadhi stage. Sudeva Goswami is seeing things and he is telling us. In samadhi he is seeing this. So it becomes a big difficult, isn't it? It is a big difficult. A lot of people have still questions about fifth canto, you know. They say fifth canto is a little bit hard. These Americans have gone to the moon. Fifth canto says moon is not practical to go. They are unable to compromise with that. Anyway, that's another side. Leave that behind. So many things like that. We have this understanding, what we see is the only truth. If you have that, very difficult to understand Upanishads. Very difficult to understand even Bhagavatam, what Krishna is saying to us. Is it not? So Panchamaskandam, or the fifth canto, is an eye-opener to all of us. Even prior to that, with Varaham's appearance itself is enough. It starts, the problem starts from there itself. Lord Varaha appeared and he brought the earth from the water underground, from the water, and put it on the top of the water. All these things, people are reading all these things and they are thinking, how can this be? Where did he leave the earth planet? And Varaham was carrying them on the two tusks and he was carrying the earthly planet. So what's the size of the Varaham? Where was he standing with the earth on the top of the tusk? All these questions are coming one after the other. And finally, some people accept it, they have no difficulty. But the proper way to understand this is that what we see is not the truth always. At least if we can come out of that perception, what we perceive through the eyes and the ears, and come to understand that creation is a lot more than that. Lot more than that. So, in this way, Srimad Bhagavatam is presenting us, and Sugar Brahma Rishi were talking about in the second canto, where Sugar Brahma Rishi's personality, when we say personality, not in the sense Ahangaram side, that's not the personality here. What is Sugar Brahma Rishi? Yasya anubhavam akhila shruti saramekam adhyalma divam aditi tirshadam tamondham samsarinam karunayah purana guhyam tam vyasasunum upayami gurum muninam. That one verse, there are two verses there glorifying Sugar Brahma Rishi, isn't it? One next to each other. What was the other one? Yam pravrajantam anupetam apetakrityam dvaipayano virahakadaram ajuhava putredidan maidayattaravopinedu tam sarvabhudakhridayam munimanatosmi. That word, these two verses is glorification of Sugar Brahma Rishi by his disciple Sudha Goswami. In Bhagavatam you will see this. Two verses, they are called Yugmaga. Yugmaga means, in two verses, you can't keep one verse separate from the other. They are together. These two verses are always together. Only then it will make sense. Because it refers to one person, one personality, so Sugar Brahma Rishi, and they are connected to each other. Similarly, you will see two verses in the Ekadasha Skandam about Krishna. Two verses are there. Deyam sada paribhavagnam abhishtadoham tirthaspadam shiva virinjanidam sharanyam vrityartiham pranadavala bhavagdi bodham vande mahapurushade charanaravindam. There is one verse. Next to that tektua sudupsida surepsida rajya lakshmi dharmishtam arya vajasa yadagadaranyam mayamrgam deidayipsidamanyodhaval vande mahapurushade charanaravindam. First verse is addressing Krishna, second verse is addressing Ramachandra. So, two verses about Sugar Brahma Rishi in the beginning and two verses about Krishna and Ramachandra together
in the 11th canto. To tell, while this is, when is it spoken? It is spoken in the Navayogi Samvadam. Nimi Navayogi Samvadam. That's where it comes.
So, and then there are two verses later on about Srimad Bhagavatam also, in the same way, about two verses. First about Shuga Brahmarshi, two verses. Then about Krishna, two verses together. And then another two verses about Srimad Bhagavatam.
That comes later in the 12th canto, we'll see that.
So, in this way, Srimad Bhagavatam is structured in such a way that when you come to the 12th canto finally, you come to understand that taking Krishna shelter is the only thing what we have to do here in this world. Finally, while leaving this body, if we have gone through Srimad Bhagavatam, ultimately we have to take Krishna shelter. Krishna shelter. When we say Krishna shelter, means that we have to become spiritual. Atma. Atma is Krishna, isn't it? Antaryami is Krishna. That means completely go into the spiritual energy and leave the material energy. That is where the Bhagavatam finishes there. So we'll continue next Saturday. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.